a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the meeting of the Senate Taxation Committee. And we'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senator Alstein?
Present.
Senator Howey?
Here.
Senator Gerstead?
Here.
Senator Maher? Senator Merchant?
Here.
Senator Nelson?
Here.
Senator Peterson?
Here.
Senator Frisley?
Here.
Senator Hansen?
Here.
One gone.
Okay, we do have a quorum. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
See, moved by Senator Gerstead, seconded by Senator Merchant. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. I believe we have one fairly important item of business as we start today. I have come to an awareness that I believe our secretary is having a birthday today. So,
happy birthday!
Yeah, thank you.
Happy birthday, Laura.
Thank you.
Yes, news does travel in strange ways.
Bad news.
I would remind you that, let's see, first of all, I want to introduce our pages because I'm going to send one or both of them on an errand here in just a minute. Kaylin Yoberg from Peer, and, oh, my page is gone. The other page is Ashley Kramer's from Huron, and in fact, she's not only my page, she's my neighbor. But Kaylin, could you go over to the Senate State Affairs meeting and tell Senator Knutson that we're ready to take his bill, because we'll take that up first. And while she's doing that, I have the usual admonitions that those of you who are going to testify, be sure that you identify yourself and be sure that the microphone is turned on, because these proceedings do get carried out over the Internet, not only live, but they're also archived, and so that they can be retrieved at any time in the future. And so it's really a valuable thing to be able to be heard. Also, those of you who are testifying, please sign in at the sheet on the podium back there by the door, so we can have your name spelled correctly in the minutes, and at least that's the hope. One other thing that always gets mentioned, and I will do so, is if you have a pager or a cell phone, please turn it so it doesn't make noise. And with that having been said, we are ready to have testimony on Senate Bill 67, which is an act to revise the property tax levies for the general fund for school districts. So now I would welcome our first proponent of Senate Bill 67. Good morning, sir. If there's a green light, that's a good sign.
Well, it was dull, but now it's bright. So, Dave Knutson, State Senator from Sioux Falls. Senate Bill 67 is the bill that would make the annual Cutler-Gabriel adjustment, which this legislature has made every year since 1995. When Governor Janklow put in place, along with the legislature, his property tax reduction program back in 1995, there was a provision that Steve Cutler and Larry Gabriel were the principal proponents of, to annually adjust the school general fund mill levies downward each year, so that the percentage that the state pays of the entire K-12 general fund education costs would stay the same. And this turns out to have been a wonderfully effective tool. In the 15 years since 1995, the general fund mill levies for schools have gone down on owner-occupied and commercial property by almost 60%, or owner-occupied and agricultural property by almost 60%. They've gone down by 50%, just a little less than 50% on commercial property over that same time period, because we've had increases where the state took additional shares of the total burden to allow for further property tax reduction. The state's share has actually grown from originally 45% up to today's, I think it is 54 or 55%. And so we've really seen over a long period of time, by a lot of small steps, a significant amount of relief to local property taxpayers. And this bill would simply continue that program and do it in 2010. The actual size of the mill levy adjustment each year is a very complicated thing. The Department of Revenue is heavily involved in that calculation, along with the Bureau of Finance and Management, and that is a calculation that typically is not made till near the end of the session. So in the second house, this bill is one of the very last ones to be passed, and so in the first house we simply try and explain the mechanics of the process, and then the bill as drafted just adjusts each of the rates by a penny, and so we know that that's extremely unlikely to be the actual number, but we need to have kind of a placeholder there in the bill at this time. But it is obviously important that we pass this bill on the Senate side so it can go over to the House, and then we can work on the final numbers, the real numbers, if you will, once we know for sure where we end up with K-12 funding and so forth. And so I'd urge the committee to give a due pass to this bill, and would be glad to try and answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. To allow him to be able to get back to State Affairs, does anyone have any questions of the Senator? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Knudsen, thank you for coming with this bill. Can you do a couple things? Remind us of how much money is in the property tax reduction fund at this point?
I think it's in the $60 million range, something in that order of magnitude at least.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And following up, I recently heard a budget analyst for the national government give a speech in which she said that when it's raining, when the economy is down, the most appropriate place to look for funding is in some budget reserves. Not entirely, of course, but and I don't know if you would concur with that statement.
I don't know that I'm not sure I could agree or disagree with that statement. I think it obviously depends on the particularities of the state budgets involved.
I would suggest that really the function of this particular piece of legislation is pretty far apart from that. This is just a continuation of the method that has been used in determining how much funds are supposed to come from each of the three types of property. Senator Peterson?
A question, if
yes,
I may.
Please.
Thank you. This is Senator Knudsen. On the second page, I noticed the paragraph, line 8, that we're deleting out what we used to call the non-AGC. I thought that was, when we passed the bill, I thought that was deleted out a year ago.
Yeah,
evidently, it wasn't.
Senator Peterson, I think this just must have been one of those that we missed because it should have. We did get rid of the non-AGZ classification once and for all in 2009, and so I was a little surprised that that had stayed in there. Although, again, one of the problems that makes this a very difficult calculation is that our fiscal year, of course, stretches over two property tax assessment years, and it may be that last time we did this was the tail end of the last calendar year in which non-AG Z was still assessed.
Yes, Senator Follow Peterson. Up, if I may. I noticed it was in here, and of course, I too thought that we had done away with that when we enacted the legislation. And I did have a constituent call me that had purchased a piece of property last year, and it's carrying the non-Ag Z designation with the full valuation in the forms that he just received a month or two ago. Is that correct? I see some nodding in the back.
Perhaps other people could deal with that question. I just wonder if somehow it was related to a purchase occurring before July 1. I'm just not sure, Senator Peters.
Okay.
Yes.
Could
the fellow in the back
ask Jason to come up and answer that? Because I want to clarify that, because I really thought that, you know, when we passed this piece of legislation that a whole year ago that we had done away with non-Ag Z, but evidently we hadn't.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
My name is Jason Dilges. I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management. Sorry, I'm just going to try to clarify. I'm not a proponent at this time. You'll see me on the other side. So, but thanks for the opportunity. Senator Peterson, you are correct. The non-Ag Z classification will not be around for the levies that you will set for taxes, 2010 taxes payable in 2011. But like Senator Knutson mentioned, there is a levy for 09 taxes payable this year in 2010. So 2010, if you think about it, the last half of calendar 10 will fill into the fiscal 2011 budget, which is what you're putting together right now. And so that will phase out at the end of this calendar year. And so the levies that you will set for 2010 payable in 2011 will not have the non-Ag Z classification, and most of that value, as I understand it, will probably go, will revert back into agricultural property and probably some into commercial, although I can't give you the specifics, but it will be gone in 2011, as I understand it.
Senator, thank you for clearing that up for me, because I know when we originally written the bill, we were doing away with non-Ag Z, and evidently it was this delayed implementation of that part. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. To clarify, it's merely only the reason for that being that taxes are paid on a calendar year, and the state budget and the state aid formula follows a fiscal year. And so had that not occurred, you are correct, you would not see that in this proposal.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Senator Adelstein.
I have an amendment.
Let's see. Would you like to circulate it?
I'm sorry. I guess here. There are two of them. Didn't have my name on the top of it.
See, one of the pages, I'll give a copy to Senator Knutson. And then here's some other copies that some of the folks in the audience might want.
I didn't have my name signed on all of them, sorry.
Okay, would someone want to offer the amendment?
I offer that amendment, please.
Okay, a move by Senator Adelstein. Is there a second? Second by?
Schusted.
Okay, Senator Adelstein, would you like to present your amendment?
May I speak to it
yes.
At this point? Mr. Chairman, for many years, there has been a unfair discrimination between the mill levy that goes on ag property and owner-occupied. It certainly is a tradition that was made some years ago, I think primarily because of some political realities within the state. The time has come, however, where if we accept the concept that real property has the responsibility for educating all children, regardless of where they live in the state, then the real property should all be assessed at the same amount. In District 32, we have many retired people, and I'm sure in districts in Sioux Falls and for example, in Deadwood and Lead and Spearfish, there are people who have been paying taxes and have educated three generations, and why they should pay 135 or 140% of the same amount that another piece of property that happens to be classified agricultural is totally unclear to me. So while I very much commend and believe deeply in the Cutler-Gabriel process, this does not in any way interfere with it. All it does is change the mathematics which Mr. Dilges will use when he arrives at the final amount of the mill levy. And I would very much appreciate your support of this amendment, and with the amendment, it goes to the floor.
Okay, are there any other comments on the amendment? This would be just committee action. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those of you that sat on the A committee and listened to Secretary Even talk about the impact of ag in the state of South Dakota understand why this exists today. During his discussion, he was telling you that 40% of the employees of the state of South Dakota are ag-related, and he told you that almost 50% of the total tax burden, all taxes paid in South Dakota, are borne by ag. Ag pays almost 50% of the total tax burden in the state of South Dakota. Ag land does not produce children. The homes produce children. The ag land, the farmers have homes, the ranchers have homes, the city people have homes. There's a reason for this that our senators and representatives before us put this in, and it's to have some sort of even distribution of the financing of our schools. But remember, 50%, almost 50% of all taxes paid in South Dakota come from ag. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Knutson, would you like to respond to this, please?
If I could just make a comment, Senator Hansen, or Mr. Chairman, I appreciate this opportunity. Please. The differential that has had a lower mill rate for agricultural property than other classifications of property has been around quite a long time. I know in 1995, when I worked with Governor Janklow in creating his property tax reduction program, which put in the three categories of owner-occupied, ag, and non-ag, we had at that point in time already a differential recognizing, I think, essentially what Senator Peterson said, that agriculture by its nature has a heavy investment in land in a way that is not paralleled in other industries, and so you have a large land area that produces a relatively few children, and so that differential, recognizing that unique feature of agricultural land, was in place in 1995, and we simply carried forward that tradition. So I'm guessing that the preferential treatment of agricultural property, recognizing its special feature of by necessity having a large land mass and relatively few children being educated in school, has been around for 20 or 30 years and possibly more. I don't know if Fred would know for sure, but it's really been a long time. And I guess even though I am a city dweller, I seems to me that the recognition that agricultural land just by its very nature has large values and the low utilization of kids makes the existing system we have make sense to me. And so I would be an opponent of my friend Senator Adelstein's amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak to the amendment if I have.
Please.
I think that it is fair to say that the system we currently have does not give ag preferential treatment. I believe it gives ag a fair treatment. As Senator Peterson stated already, ag producers in this state bear about 50% of the burden already, and this amendment would be if you want to call it what it is a tax increase for ag producers. And we already have a system that has traditionally proven itself to be fair and equitable. And for us to change that now and increase taxes on ag producers who already pay carry half of the load right now would be a terrible mistake for us to make.
Thank you, Senator. Further comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Adelstein.
With all due respect to my good friend, the Majority Leader, Senator Knudsen, because something has been around for a long time doesn't mean that it should be should last forever. Fairness sometimes is served by change. I have no idea how the statement that agricultural persons pay half the tax burden. I don't know how much sales tax they pay. I have no idea. So if that's true, I'd certainly like to see evidence of it. But the key, however, was just raised very, very clearly. And that is that the wealth in ag land produces few children. Let me take one of the precincts in my district, which is largely inhabited by retired people whose homes are assessed at $200,000 to $250,000 each. They produce no children, and they've already educated two generations. Now, if we want to say that the property that produces children should pay a different mill levy than the properties that do not. With modern technology, every time a child registers to go to school, he gives his address. Very quickly, that particular precinct, we have how many, 3,000 in the state? Every precinct, then, we could determine how many children went to school from that precinct. And what we should do, then, is apply a mill levy differently to each school district depending on the number of children that they produce. If for some reason an agricultural district produces no children, well, then their levy should go down. And of course then a poor neighborhood who maybe have small homes with many children, their mill levy should go up. If the number of children produced by the wealth in real estate is the measure of how we will educate our children, then let us do it totally, not simply taking the wealth in ag property and say, oh, we'll set it aside to only pay 64-65% of what homeowners pay, and therefore the logic of why the taxpayers of Sioux Falls, just to pick the school, Sioux Falls School District for a moment, should pay $4,600,000 more than the same wealth invested in some other county is absolutely inconceivable to me.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The average age of a farmer in the state of South Dakota is 57 years old. If we followed that line of logic, ag really wouldn't pay any taxes.
Then why should there be a differential? I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I would ask Senator Peterson, if you're saying that the average age should pay no taxes, then why will you say that the wealth of a 57-year-old in the city should pay 135% of that same farmer? Why should they pay more? That's what I'm asking. And this bill, as I say, this amendment very clearly makes it states that for copper an owner-occupied dwelling shall be adjusted to equalize the levies between the two classifications. That's all I'm asking, is equal. No greater for ag, no lesser for ag, no greater for homeowners, no lesser for homeowners. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any further comments from the committee? Senator Gerstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure, but who can answer this? Perhaps Mr. Dilges. You know, there are a lot of, quite a bit of property that's held by people from other places and perhaps people of wealth. Maybe Mr. Turner has some property out west and so on. And I'm wondering if that property, if it's just held and not used as farmland, is that taxed as non-ag or as ag? Just a question.
Well, Senator, I think that I could probably kind of answer that. It's determined by the use. If it's used as agricultural property, it is taxed, and it should be taxed as agricultural property. If it's held as for potential for development, then it should be recognized as either commercial or owner-occupied, of course, is limited only to the person who's living in the home. You know, a rental home does not qualify for owner-occupied. Well, further comments. I think that the chairman could kind of advise you that I don't really see this I don't see this as the proper place for an amendment such as this, because again, remember the role that this particular piece of legislation is designed to play is just to follow the process, and the real process doesn't come until we know how many dollars are going to be required for the support of the state general fund education. And as Senator Knutson said, that doesn't come until later in the session. So,
with all fairness, Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
this establishes the mathematical basis for the later legislation. Once established, this inequality will flow then all the way through the process. So with all due respect, I think this template for the mathematics that follows needs to be changed right now, today, on this bill, to give fairness to people who own property in the state of South Dakota. I appreciate your remark, but the process starts here, and it should start here correctly, not in the fallible method of establishing, as it says in the bill, without amendment, these ratios. Levy shall maintain the same proportion to each other's represented in the mathematical relationship. I think we must change that now. Otherwise, the whole process will be flawed going forward.
Okay, well, I guess that's the function that we have in voting on the amendment, which we will do now. I will call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay.
You want a roll call on the amendment?
On the amendment.
Okay. Senator Adelstein?
Aye.
Senator Howey?
No.
Senator Gerstead?
No.
Senator Maher? Senator Merchant?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Senator Peterson?
No.
Senator Frisley?
No.
Senator Hansen?
No.
Two noes, 6 yes.
Okay, so the amendment fails. We're back to the
6-2. Yeah.
2-6.
Mm-hmm. 2 yes.
The amendment fails, so we're now back to the original bill as written, Senate Bill 67. And I would ask, are there further proponents that would like to offer testimony? Further proponents? Are there any opponents?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
May I speak as an opponent?
You may. You certainly may.
Thank you. Do you mind to speak from there or from here? where would you prefer me?
Okay, Senator, you go ahead as your opponent testimony.
I oppose the bill as drawn because the penalty that it places on homeowners, owner-occupied property, this town of Spearfish will pay an extra $523,000 as a result of this bill. And it may be more once we get to the end line. Senator Merchant's district will pay $231,000 more because of this bill if it passes. Senator Gerstad's will cost $5,637,000. And, of course, my district will cost about $3 million. Senator Howey's district, Hot Springs, will have some $400,000. So I would hope that we can defeat this bill as it's now drawn and have it redrawn in a fair method at a future time. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further opponents, please. Welcome back to the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Again, good morning. My name is Jason Dilges, and I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management. I come this morning trying to be a realist, also representing a governor who's been a very avid supporter of property tax relief in the past. We've come a long ways in terms of changing the relationship between local property taxes and state funding of property taxes and how we fund schools. Back in the late 1970s, it would probably surprise you to know that the state picked up less than 30% of the total cost of educating children in our state, and property taxes provided the vast majority of those funds to fund education. Fast forward a little bit to 1995 and the whole property tax crisis that lay before us. The legislature and the governor worked together to provide a credit of 20% and then ultimately increase that to 30% property tax relief. Since that time, and as property tax relief flowed in through the state aid to education formula, this little item about maintaining a relationship has really caused property tax relief to grow in South Dakota. So not only are we providing that 30% going back to 1995 values, but we're also making good on that commitment going forward in that we maintain the relationship that the state is committed to for funding K-12 education and also property tax relief in our state. And so I think that's a great thing and something that we should all be proud of doing over the last several years. Having said that, obviously we're falling onto some hard economic times, and we continue to try to maintain that relationship. The governor proposed a bill last year that was defeated that attempted to do something similar as what you're going to see this year in our bill, House Bill 1084. And that would merely keep the levies at the same rate in which they were for paid 2010 taxes. And so, again, a bill like this, obviously reducing those levies, will contain a fiscal impact, and I'm sure that you're aware of it. The original estimate was $4.1 million to passing a bill like this to reduce levies to maintain the relationship, which right now is about 56.5% state funds versus local funds in the formula. And so we've had some changes and some updates in the last month. We've gotten latest valuation numbers for property taxes. We also have received some better information on the number of students that we'll have in our system for next year. That has gone up. The last many years, you probably saw reductions, no doubt, in the number of school-aged children that we're supporting in our state. We've had about 3 years now of fairly flat numbers, but the last couple years they've started to go up, and it appears for next year we'll see almost an 1,100 student increase on a statewide basis. And so that requires us to put more dollars into the formula to fund that. As a result, we're now estimating that the numbers that the governor gave you in December are underfunded by approximately $3.7 million in general funds, and that primarily is to help fund now the new 600 students that we think that will be enrolled in schools next year. because then the levies wouldn't have been reduced as much to cover the additional costs for those students, the value of keeping those levies the same reduces. And so the good news is that the price tag for keeping the levies the same now is only about $3.1 million, not the $4.1 million. So now that I've got you sufficiently confused and with the components of how the formula works, I'll just leave it to say there's a lot of things that will change. Senator Knutson in his testimony was just spot on with that. It's a very complex formula that you all have written over the years. Things will go down to the last few days of session, and I'm sure we'll be haggling about what the property tax levies will be. I would ask that while this bill likely will continue to move through the process, despite my testimony this morning, there'll also be a bill, House Bill 1084, and I would ask, and I'll ask the House members to try and keep open to that type of a discussion as we work our way towards the end of the session. No doubt this is a big component of what hinges the state aid formula and the budget as we work through the session. So as you move the bill forward, just please continue to think about the fiscal impact that it will have. We're asking that those levies not be reduced. It doesn't say that the commitment to education and property tax relief is not there. But again, in these hard economic times, I think before we place that vote, we should recognize that there is a cost to everything, and that cost will be borne either by the general fund or the taxpayers of the state. Neither is an easy proposition, and I'll grant that. It's difficult. But right now, we're looking at every nickel we can find, and certainly this was one of those, hence the governor's proposal. Not that he's against property tax relief, not that he's against school funding, just a means to try and help balance the budget. So with that, thank you for your time this morning, and I'll answer questions at the appropriate moment.
Okay, thank you. Are there further opponents? Any other opponents? If not, I'll close to committee questions of either the proponents or opponents. Senator Gerstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Delges, I appreciate your information this morning. Thank you for coming in front of us. And, of course, you know, there will be different points of view as we go along. My research tells me that the percentage that our state government gives to education is the lowest in the United States, albeit, you know, it's better than it used to be, that's for sure. And so with hard economic times, which you have emphasized, I guess I don't quite understand or would have a hard time explaining to my constituents why their taxes will be increased to take over the state budget when it's the Property Tax Reduction Fund has a lot of money in it. So I guess, you know, taxpayers pay money to the state, and we have a fund that we all, you know, look at and try to manage in a proper way. And if we still have money, I don't know why we can ask the taxpayers to pay more money, especially in these times. So I guess if I could get a little more understanding, I mean, I know you're looking for every nickel, but why this would happen, and you would have to think this is going to be unpopular.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Senator Gerstead, certainly I don't envy your position, and just so you know, I feel pretty uncomfortable sitting up here today advocating against this bill. But at any rate, we both do what we have to do. With respect to your point about paying the bill for educating students, providing property tax relief, or funding the general budget of the state, we all know that we're all taxpayers and we represent taxpayers, so the money has to come from somewhere, and that's a great point, and thank you for making that. I think this was just one of those means where it might be more palatable on a statewide basis, choosing the property tax route to help part of that difficulty that the state faces in the general fund side of things. Does it make it the perfect solution? No, I don't think it does. With regard to your comment on the property tax reduction fund, if you recall, that was the, quote, insurance policy that was pledged to continue property tax relief now and into the future. That fund contains about $63.6 million today. What concerns me going forward is the receipts to that fund continually decline. And so, if you will, the insurance policy is becoming softer from my perspective. For example, last year in 2009, the Property Tax Reduction Fund, with all of the sources it has for income, took in about a little over $125 million. If I had to guesstimate to you the total cost of property tax relief in South Dakota, it would be that $122 million going back to the 95 values and then indexed for Cutler-Gabriel. So I would guess it to be over $150 million a year. So you don't have enough. Or at least your receipts every year are not quite enough to match that. What really concerns me, Senator, is that for 2011, we're now estimating that that property tax reduction fund will only collect a little over $118 million. So it's going down by about $7 million from 09 to 11. That concerns me that we don't have that insurance policy, and certainly the governor's recommendations to you would be to use another $31 million of the cash in that fund. So from 63, reduce that by $31 million. That's what concerns me, is that I would hate for us to be able to, for not to be able to tell the taxpayers we're going to continue to provide that 30% relief. Plus, you have all the changes in the different classes, and Senator Adelstein brought that up. There's been some significant changes. Obviously, the way we value agriculture will change. I don't know if that's going to result in an up or a down. Certainly, the difficult economy has really been a challenge for us. We're now estimating that valuation growth for next year will only be about 2%. Now, that's great compared to other states around the country, but comparing to our historical averages of 4 and 5%, that's difficult for us to see. The other issue is the legislature passed a bill last year that says we're going to maintain our relationships going forward. So, for example, agriculture, whatever they pay in taxes now, we have to adjust those levies within those classes of property so that agriculture continues to pay, and it's about 18.5% for ag, and then it's spread across the other classes. So we have to make sure that stays the same. Again, not asking for sympathy for us in trying to make all this fit together at the end, but it is a challenge. And so I want to make sure what that pledge is there for property tax relief. The property tax reduction fund is part of that. I don't have a magic number of how much money we should have in that fund, only that the more it has, the more comfortable I am. So thanks for pointing that out.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, a couple of last points. I am speaking on behalf of my constituents, and I have constituents in Sioux Falls, but also in the town of Chi. And the town of Chi has one of the highest property taxes in the state because its school district is so minute. And so, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of them, as well as my other constituents. And I guess last year, at the very end of our session, as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because sometimes I'm way off, but I thought we got about $5 million from ARRA funds, and the plea then from some of us was, can't we give Medicaid providers a 1%, you know, increase? But instead, that ARRA funds, they were tucked into the property tax reduction fund. So, I mean, if we took the philosophy of ARRA funds, which is to stimulate the economy, it seems to me it would be a better idea to get those funds, which we would be doing with this bill, out into the hands of all of us who are consumers to help the economy.
Yes, sir. Senator, the way the ARRA funding worked last year, the main components of funding that we received through the stimulus were for Medicaid, you're right, and then through the education stabilization funds. We elected, as a collective group, to use $71 million in the 09 budget, $88 million for this year's budget, and that's grown now because the Medicaid budget has gone up. The reason, I guess, why we did what we did was that we that our revenues were down so much that we had to use those stimulus dollars to get us back to where we were before. And as we waded through all the conference calls on what to use those stabilization funds for education for, it became clear that most of the states had to use that money just to get back to zero, if you will. And so we did that. It allowed us, it allowed South Dakota to go in even further. We did the 3%, as you recall, for K through 12. The rest of the entities that you commonly think of, the medical providers and state employees, went with a zero increase. And so we used the predominantly the large amount of that funding to just bring ourselves back up to a level and then follow the formula. Certainly, the governor has now proposed to keep funding for K-12 flat, partially because it looks like the recovery is going to take even longer, and our stimulus funds will run out at the end of next fiscal year. So we tried to do it in as responsible a manner as we could. This is just one component to that, obviously. I should try to point out that this bill, NOR 1084, does not affect the net dollars that a school district would receive. We're just haggling, I think, about who's going to pay for it, whether it be the general fund of the state or the property taxpayers of the state. So I just want to make that clarification that the dollars to districts will remain the same whether this bill passes, fails, or 1084 passes or fails.
Thank you.
Chairman.
Senator Merchant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dilges,
hi.
Just wondering about the receipts that you spoke about. Is that all interest that the Property Tax Reduction Fund has obtained, or are there other receipts that are being deposited?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Senator Merchant, good question. There's really three sources of revenue to the Property Tax Reduction Fund. First, it's the 49.5% of net machine income from video lottery. The second is the state's percentage, 60% of the wireless telecommunications taxes. And then third is that pursuant to the initiated measure 2 from about 3 years ago, 33% of all cigarette taxes collected over $35 million goes into the Property Tax Reduction Fund. So that's the three sources, and that's what yielded the $125 million from last year. And then I just gave you the projections for 11 that were in the governor's budget.
Senator Alstein.
And Mr. Dilges, you had mentioned, if I heard correctly, that if the bill passes, there would be an increased cost of $8.7 million to the state and rather than to property owners. Or, as you calculate it, without the bill, staying at the same mill levy, it would stay at a $3.1 million increase. If that's, am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, just to clarify, the cost, as I see it, of Senate Bill 67 now is $3.1 million of state funds.
Yes.
So if the bill passes, the general fund will need to come up with another $3.1 million of general funds. If the bill fails, $3.1 million of taxes will be borne instead of the general fund by the property taxpayers of the state.
All right. Of that $3.1 million, what portion of that would be paid by homeowners and what proportion would be done, owner-occupied versus ag?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to do my best here, and these are going to be...
I knew only approximates, of course.
Approximates. Okay, so if... there's a lot of what-ifs here. If education is funding is stays constant at no change, and you reduce the levies pursuant to this piece, you don't...
Don't
reduce the levies pursuant to this piece of legislation, then the 3.1 would have to be borne in the proportion that the taxes are collected. So, for example, 18.56% of the total
local effort taxes paid are from agriculture. 33.5% come from owner-occupied, and 48%, and I'm rounding here, come from what we call commercial property. So I think you could multiply those percentages and get awfully close. Again, we'd have to run them through the formula, make sure that ag still picks up its share of the total, and so that's why I'm fairly confident that if you take them at these rates, you would get to, you could assign a value for each one of those.
And if I'm, Mr. Chairman, may I go ahead with the numbers? If I'm correct, at least when I looked at last time, the total value of ag property and total value of owner-occupied came out to be very close to the same number, percentage-wise. Is that correct?
If I could, Mr. Yes. Chairman. And I'm just throwing out numbers here.
Sure.
The estimate for 2010 payable in 2011, now this is valuation, okay? Agriculture is $19.7 billion. Owner-occupied, $22.9 billion. Commercial, $15.5 billion. A total value of $58.1 billion of statewide value.
Very good. So you made it very, very clear to me. If I may, Mr. Chairman, at least I can ask this right. If the approximates, and obviously it's an approximate, if the 18% bill is paid by $19.7 billion and the 33 1/3% is paid by 22.9, it would seem to me that the percentages on valuation, well, obviously, appeal to me, I wouldn't have had the amendment. But am I wrong somewhere?
What, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I want to be clear. I don't want to debate your amendment, but I certainly am comfortable given statistics. But you know, the relationship in the levies was ascertained before I was here and before most of you were here. But you are correct. The agriculture is about 1/3 of the total statewide value. Owner occupied is a little over 1/3 of the statewide value, and commercial is a little under 1/3 of the statewide value because of the levies, and that's why you'd have to take them times the taxes paid, not the valuations. Agriculture pays 18.5% of the total costs, owner-occupied 33.5%, and then 48% by commercial. That's how we get to the amount of taxes paid. Remembering that when you receive your property tax bill, and I just got mine last week, that there's nowhere you can look on, at least on my tax statement, and find a $2.57 levy for agriculture on my ag land. It's about $7 a thousand because you have other things, and it is quickly becoming that. And I think that's something that the legislature should be proud of. The general ed levy is one of the smaller levies that's left in the property tax system. You've got retirements, and you've got bond redemption, and you've got capital outlay, and you've got special ed, and you've got all those things. So you aren't going to be able to tie or correlate those levies to the other. They have to be looked in a comprehensive basis. So this by no means explains all property taxes in the state. We're just talking about school taxes.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think you just brought up a very good point. We're only talking about the general school budget, the general school fund. There are about four other funds, the capital outlay, the special ed, the teacher retirement, and all classes of property are taxed the same, correct, on the rest of those. They all pay on the total value.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
The only break is on the one fund.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I believe you are correct, Senator. They are applied equally, and you're also correct. There's lots of other things that go on to this.
This is just school, there's counties, and then there's townships, there's fire districts, all kinds of things. Those are all local decisions. As we're all aware, this is the only levy that's determined by the legislature on a statewide basis.
Senator Peterson.
But to reiterate, there are multiple other funds for schools, as we just said, and they're all the same. It's just this one.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You are correct.
Further questions? I think we're working this bill entirely too hard. And I don't mean to be critical, but you look at the bill real closely, and the changes that are being asked to be made really indicate that this bill is nothing but a placeholder. It's the probability of this bill in its present form passing through the Senate and passing through the House as is highly unlikely. And I don't know how to be more specific, but this bill really does need to pass, because it really would kind of mess up the whole flow of taxation. Don't think of this bill as being a referendum on our tax policy. There's other ways that could be addressed, and I've allowed a little bit more latitude in questions here than probably what I should, but we do have the time to allow to do that. So we'll close the bill to public testimony and questions within the committee or action. Senator Howey.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move do pass.
Motion by Senator Howey, seconded by Senator Merchant. Do pass. Any speaking to the motion, Senator Howey?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, we know this is a placeholder. I think that's an important thing to remember. But if we do not pass this bill in what will end up being its final form, it is in effect a tax increase. And so it is very important that if we want to hold the line on taxes, that we move this forward. So I'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Any further comments? If not, those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. And the Secretary will call the roll.
Adelstein?
No.
Howey?
Yes.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Maher? Merchant?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Frisley?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
7-1, 1 excused.
Okay, Senate Bill 67 passes on a 7-1 vote with 1 excused. We will now move to Senate Bill 33, which is an act to revise certain provisions relating to delinquent tax accounts. May we have our first proponent for the Senate Bill 33?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Members of the committee. I'm Andy Fergal with the Department of Revenue and Regulation. Senate Bill 33 is brought by the department primarily to do several things. The first thing that it's designed to do is to consolidate the process for license revocation concerning delinquent tax accounts for tax licenses issued pursuant to Title 10 of the South Dakota Code, by placing the procedure for license revocation and the process for appealing a revocation in one place of the tax code, and that would be in Chapter 1059. And that chapter is the Uniform Administration of Certain State Taxes chapter. Senate Bill 33 would also clarify the license revocation process for license holders by clearly stating what triggers a license revocation and by setting forth in clear terms how to obtain a contested case hearing if aggrieved by an order of the Secretary. Nothing in Section 1 of the bill would change the process the Department currently follows in revoking licenses. Senate Bill 33 also would eliminate references to incorrect filing periods contained in Sections 10-33A-11 and 10-45-34 by repealing those sections. sections 10-33A-11 and 10-45-34 specifically conflict with sections 10-33A-10.1 and 10-45-27.3, which were enacted in 2007 by the legislature. Another thing that Senate Bill 33 would do would repeal sections 10-33A-13 and 10-45-16, and the repeal of those sections would allow the Secretary to work with businesses to get delinquent taxes paid while the business is allowed to continue and operate. Those are the reasons that the bill is before you. I would ask that you pass Senate Bill 33 out of committee, and I would stand by for questions.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Are there further proponents to Senate Bill 33? Further proponents to Senate Bill 33? Seeing none, are there opponents to Senate Bill 33? Anyone speaking in opposition to Senate Bill 33? If not, I will close public testimony and offer the opportunity to ask questions, if there are any.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Howey. Oh. Senator Nelson, we have not heard from you yet today.
I've been studying the bills. Question, please. And taking in the stimulating conversations.
Correct.
Thank you. And this is based on an email that I received that of someone that has studied the bill a little more deeply than I, and I have studied it as well. Is this just an assumption that if you are one day late, you cannot continue as a licensee?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, this bill, technically, currently, the power the Secretary has in the current, under the current statutory scheme, would give them the power to prevent somebody from operating if they were one day late. In fact, the statute by operation of law says that a retailer shall not continue as such if they are delinquent in their tax obligation to the state. However, the department wants to see businesses succeed because they drive the economy in South Dakota and, of course, our tax collection base. I just briefly go through with you how it works. I mean, if somebody becomes delinquent and we see that on our system, the system automatically kicks out a tax delinquency notice to the taxpayer. And the taxpayer would get that tax delinquency notice and be given the opportunity to clear that delinquency up. In addition, the department would continue to try to contact that taxpayer probably 3 to 4 different times to try and make sure that the taxpayer has the ability to correct a delinquency and the opportunity to do so. Only after that has all occurred would the department secretary send out an order basically revoking the license. And then this would be the beginning of the process. The order of delinquency would go out to the taxpayer, and they would be given 14 days to request a hearing from the time they received that order. Just by way of reference, in fiscal year 2009, or in calendar year 2009, the past year, we sent out 309 revocation orders out of approximately 77,000 business tax licensees. So we send very few of these out in the overall scheme of things. After we send out the order of revocation, probably between the time a hearing is scheduled and the time the order is sent, a majority of those are cleared up by the taxpayers. They come and contact us. We get their attention with the order, and we're contacted, and the matter's cleared up. another good number of them are cleared up between the time the hearing is set and the time the hearing actually takes place. And very few proceed to actual revocation by order after a hearing. But those folks that aren't taking care of their tax obligation to that point probably need to be revoked, because they're people that aren't doing business correctly and they're competing against other retailers and businesses who are doing it right.
Thank you.
Senator Holly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Nelson brings up the issue that concerned me with this bill as well. And it looks as though, as I have studied this bill, that in Section 1, Line 6, it just clearly says that no one may continue as a retailer, period, if they have failed to file a return on time. Is there anywhere in statute that deals with the process that you just spoke of? Because I think, Mr. Chair, if I might, the process that you've just spoken of makes sense, and I'm heartened to hear that that's a process you go through. But that's not what I believe the statute says, unless there's something I've missed.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Howie, if you look at the bill and you look at Section 5, that's a repealer of Section 10-45-34. If you read that whole strike-through paragraph there, you'll see that, in essence, 10-45-34 says the same thing as Section 1. And again, the purpose of this bill is to consolidate the revocation of all tax licenses issued by the department in one part of the code. If you look at 10-45-34 as it's currently in the code, it says every person who is the holder of a sales tax license and who fails to file a return, or who has filed a return and has failed to pay the tax due the state under this law on or before the 15th of the second month following the quarter or any other reporting period authorized, shall no longer continue as a retailer, and his sales tax license is hereby revoked and canceled. That's the current statute that we're operating under now. And as a matter of policy, the department works with taxpayers, as opposed to the second they don't receive a return or the tax isn't submitted with a return, going out and revoking them. We want them to succeed, so we allow them to operate while we have contact with them, and only when that contact does not result in the taxpayer taking care of the delinquency does an order of revocation get sent. What Section 1 does that's a little bit different than Section 10-45-34 is it gives some discretion to the secretary and says the secretary may, by order, revoke or cancel the license, as opposed to it being an operation of law.
Senator.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I don't believe you answered my question. My question was this. Maybe I need to state it more clearly. In the first statement of line 6, verse. okay, the first section, it says no person licensed, and then it goes on, may continue as a retailer. Now, I understand you're removing Section 5, or you're requesting removal of that, and I don't have issue with that. And I understand the last sentence in Section 1 says the secretary may by order revoke, but my question is this. It has to do with the first sentence. That just simply says a retailer cannot continue. if they didn't file it on time. And my question then is, where does it state in statute the procedure that you have very well articulated here? Because I don't see it, and I think if you're going to really clean this up, it needs to appear somewhere, maybe between the first sentence and the second sentence of that section.
Mr. Chairman, pursuant to the APA, which South Dakota has adopted, the Administrative Procedures Act, Title 126 requires a hearing to revoke a license. And so, pursuant to 126, we provide for a hearing for a person whose license is being revoked, any type of sales tax license. And the procedure we follow is that specifically outlined now in this bill. I mean, if there's a delinquent taxpayer, what happens is an order of revocation is sent to the delinquent taxpayer after we've made many attempts to contact. And we do that because we're required to provide a hearing for anybody whose license is going to be revoked pursuant to the APA. And they may elect then to take advantage of the hearing after we send out the order. And then they can follow through the whole appeals process from the administrative level to the circuit court to the Supreme Court if they disagree with the decisions that are passed down throughout that process. So really you find the procedure for doing this by looking at other areas of the code, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to bring the bill, is so that we could put it, this procedure, in one place in the tax code where the taxpayers can go out and see it in black and white instead of having to go to the APA to figure out what their due process rights are.
Yes.
Well, at an appropriate time, I would like to move some kind of an amendment that would reference the remarks that we just had with regard to the APA or whatever it was you referred to, so that there's a specific reference in this bill that clears up what I think is not very clear.
Senator Gersten.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Howie, I want to follow up on what you said, because I think it's completely the right thing to do, because I'm confused as well. It's like we struck out a whole section and then we added it back in is what it looks like. But maybe if we say something like the secretary may by order revoke or cancel the license, comma, pursuant to state statute, whatever it is, would that then take care of things?
Would you like to respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, I would point out that in Section 2 of the bill that allows for a person to request a hearing if they're aggrieved by an order of the secretary, that section in the final sentence does clearly reference Chapter 126, which I was talking about earlier, where it says that any hearing shall be conducted and any appeal shall be taken pursuant to the provisions of Chapters 126 and 126D.
Senator Hawley.
Well, then I still have some significant discomfort with Section 1. So maybe if we just are able to add language that says in Section 1 that it's subject to the hearing process as referenced in Section 2 or something. But I think that Section 1, as it's written, is in conflict, it seems, even with Section 2. So we need to tie those two together. That's just my unlawyerly opinion.
Further questions? Further comments? Further questions? If there are no further questions, we will close the public testimony to committee discussion and or action. And I would suggest that if the bill gets sufficient votes to pass out of committee, you would certainly have an option to be able to draft perhaps conversation with the department words that would perhaps make it more understandable as far as what you're concerned. I believe that would be the best move rather than try to do that work here. Senator Howey.
Thank you for your patience with me this morning. I would like to ask the chair to consider deferring action on this to our next meeting so we'd have time to deal with this amendment here. I think we could do it more effectively and efficiently in this group than we can on the Senate floor. So that would be my request. I don't know if I need to make that in a motion. To defer this.
I can comply with that. We'll just put it on Monday's agenda.
And that would be very, very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Senator Howey. I believe that it should be cleared up. Even if it's perfectly clear to the department, it evidently isn't perfectly clear to the public, because I think all of us received an email from a mayor of one of our larger cities asking some questions about this, and they're concerned that we're leaving it totally up to the discretion of the secretary. And although that's not the intent at all, maybe by drafting suggestions as Senator Howey has come up with, that would clear that up. So maybe it'd be great to leave it.
Well, we're not being overly taxed. That's not a very good. Our committee is not that busy that we're pushed that hard. So we can certainly put that on Monday's agenda. Let's see. One thing that before we adjourn, go back earlier in the meeting, I didn't get a chance to introduce my page, Ashley Kramers from Huron. She was out doing what pagers are supposed to do when did that. And one other thing that I would suggest to the committee, the discussion that we had on Senate Bill 67, I would suggest that you spend some time in the Department of Revenue's annual report on the property tax segment, because there's some statistics there that are written out for you as far as the total valuation of the three classes of property, the amount of the total tax that's paid by each of the classes of property, and it's very well written, and I think that would be well worth spending some time in. If not, there are no further business. The next meeting will be Monday at 10 o'clock, and the motion to adjourn would be in order.
Second.
Moved by Senator Nelson, seconded by Senator Frisley. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.